It's time for three stories you should know. This week, we're going to talk about football, and fashion. And my guests are Will Leach of Sports on Earth via Skype and Jason Gay of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Hello.
All right, I'm going to go first. Football fans have been paying attention to the Combine. Of course, this is the annual opportunity for NFL-bound players, or at least some of them, to show off their skills as the assistant coaches and the scouts with their stopwatches look on. The NFL has a rule barring from combine participation players with misdemeanor or felony convictions involving violence or the use of a weapon or domestic violence or sexual assault. This is a relatively new rule that they've put in. On the surface, it sounds as if the NFL's coming down hard on those aspiring pros, but a lot of players get drafted and play in the NFL without ever having attended the combine. Joe Mixon is likely to fall into that category this time around. He's a guy who was videotaped punching a woman so hard that he broke several bones in her face. So he wasn't invited to the combine. What a punishment. Is this you can't come to the combine just another public relations ploy by the NFL? Because I vote yes. Does anybody want to argue that being shut out of the tryout camp has consequences?
I think there may be tiny short-term consequences in that for some reasons, reasons unbeknownst to me, to be honest, some people like to watch on television this event where middle-aged men with stopwatches watch people that are 21-year-old run around in their underwear for a couple of hours. That's a thing. I don't know why. But if anything, you know, the people inconvenienced by this are really not the players. They're the talent evaluators who like to have the combine because they can all kind of come in one place and just watch everything. Now, because Mixon is going to be drafted, now they're all going to set their own private times to see Mixon play, which means he'll probably get more attention from talent evaluators than he would have if he were just at the combine. So it certainly is a very NFL thing to say, we are making a strong statement to saying people like this will eventually be able to play in our league.
I mean, what we're talking about here is effectively a public relations stunt atop a public relations stunt. The combine has shrunken in value every year. It's basically television property that the NFL is able to sell, and it's, you know, never-ending off-season. And the thing that everyone talks about nowadays are just the limited value of things like the 40-yard dash and so on. And what's really important are those quote-unquote intangibles, when you can look someone directly in the eye and ask them if they are Jacksonville Jaguars material.
Maybe we should talk a little bit about how the NFL should handle the kind of person who is banned from coming to the combine. Should there be a suspension of a player before his career ever begins, or would that just make some victims of domestic violence, those who are dependent on the incomes of the offenders, less likely to come forward and talk about what had happened to him?
I mean, I can't think that far ahead, Bill, to be honest with you. And I think that there are some really serious questions in terms of what is within the NFL's purview. I mean, this is, you know, primarily, of course, the responsibility of teams in terms of their own decision making and whether or not they want to bring aboard somebody who is not representative of the values and has that kind of background. But the NFL has really gotten onto wobblier and wobblier ground whenever they've tried to broaden their ability to make these kinds of decisions. And we saw that certainly in the last couple of years with Ray Rice, Greg Hardy, and cases like that.
Yeah, it's worth noting that no matter what happens, if they have the talent, the NFL has shown they will play them. And the NFL has no interest in, like, policing the personal conduct of the players. They just don't want to get yelled at every time something happens. But the idea that there is a shared NFL values is one of the many convenient myths I think the NFL likes to push out there.
Will, you have story number two this week. Take it away.
So I live in Athens, Georgia, and this weekend, the Atlanta United MLS team will play its first game. And people here are so excited. They have sold 30,000 season tickets this year. That's the most since the Seattle Sounders, who have had held the attendance record ever since they came in the league 7 years ago. They're calling them Seattle South. There's four different fan groups already, all with their own chants, including one for corner kicks that is literally to REM's Losing My Religion. That's you in the corner. That's you with the free kick. That is literally the way it goes. People are so, so excited about this, which I find hilarious because I'm one of them as well. I've joined in the season tickets. My kids all have the Atlanta United kits. But the problem is now they have to play actual games. And right now it feels like a movement. You're excited. But the problem with sports teams is they usually make you unhappy more than they make you happy. Eventually, they get to start annoying us like every other team does. Why does he keep starting that guy? How did they lose that game? Why was he making that move? All the things that we complain about sports teams all the time. It's funny how the games will start. It will never be as good as it is right now.
You're making it sound like the beginning of a Lewis Black concert where he comes out and people cheer and clap and then he shrugs and says, well, that's it. That's as good as it's going to get tonight.
Will, I don't want to cast any aspersions on your adopted home state or certainly the recent run of the Atlanta Falcons, but did you just say pro sports excitement and Atlanta in the same paragraph? This is quite unusual for this great southern city. This is not something that we associate typically with either the Atlanta Hawks or certainly the Braves, who are on to, what, their 15th stadium home in their history.
You know, years ago, I visited the home of the Portland, Maine Sea Dogs baseball team, minor league baseball team, and their stadium was almost finished, and everybody was very excited, and they were selling jerseys and T-shirts and bumper stickers and keychains faster than they could stock the merchandise room. And the general manager and I worked out a plan that was the very best way to make money in this business is never to play a game. Just keep changing the logo and the team name and selling the stuff and never disappoint your fans. So maybe you're onto something, Will, but I really hope not, because I'm a soccer fan and I hope that they have those 30,000 season ticket holders come back and come back again and then bring their kids and sell some more season tickets.
It's certainly a way to introduce my children to the REM back catalog.
Jason, it's your turn, and please keep it short. I mean short.
Ah, yes, on the fashion beat for you guys this week, the hyper-progressive sport of professional golf has finally entered the 20th century of fashion. Players in the PGA Championship will be able to wear shorts. I said shorts, not long pants, but shorts. Not in the actual rounds that count, but in practice rounds. This is a seismic moment for the sport in this country. European golf has already allowed shorts in practice rounds for European golf events. This is a door opening that will surely lead to bare legs in major golf tournaments in America in the coming decades. And gentlemen, I don't need to tell you, you know, all the potential hazards here, but what's your take?
I'll have you say that, you know, we all knew there were dangers when John Daly came into golf. And now we are seeing the full normalization of the John Daly experience. Eventually, we're going to see shirtless players. And I'm just telling you, shirtless players are coming. And next thing you know, it'll start with tank tops. Of course, it will start with tank tops.
Why have they been not saying you could wear shorts? Are they afraid all these guys are going to show up with garish calf tattoos?
Bill, I don't want to shock you, but the sport of professional golf has been slow to change.
Kind of that and glacial pace.
there are things with regard to country club rules. Sometimes rules about people who couldn't go into the club, much less fashion choices. And so, you know, listen, this is a sport full of fuddy-duds. You know, I love golf. It makes me as crazy as anybody else. But listen, this is a pro sport that is incredibly conservative. And I think they're just terrified at the idea of looking out there one day and seeing Phil Mickelson's bare calves in the middle of a fairway.
Mm. Now, if you mention that, I'm a bit terrified of it myself. I didn't realize the ramifications of this decision, and now I back off.
But, Will, you know, there's such vanity now. There's such, you know, Tiger Woods kicked off this, like, you know, body phase of golf now where all the young players basically are incredibly fit. Some of them even have abdominal muscles, which I've never had. I don't know about you guys. And I think they're probably chomping at the bit to get into the gym and do some calf raises.
My guests for this week's three stories you should know have been Will Leach of Sports on Earth and Jason Kay of the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Bill.